I say, so we're on the third of the seven principles. We've had race and mass commercialization. We've got Africa and resistance this afternoon. We've got abolition and legacies tomorrow. And number three is another one that's, Nick was saying, you know, race was the hardest one. Obviously, economics and commercialization is hard. We've got violence, we've got terror, and that's pretty hard. So I don't think that there are all this morning's things are hard to cope with. So we needed to think about why include violence? Why are we doing this? I do think we haven't actually highlighted those things. They were a couple of posters that Abdul and I did for an event that Kate was running last summer at the Docklands. And they are hideous examples of slavery in schools. And we didn't. What we did at that conference was actually have them outside in the corridor. People could look at them, but once they'd come in, it was kind of like, that's gone. Symbolically, that's gone. We'd probably take those down at lunchtime, but if you haven't had a chance, maybe to look at those, you could. But I would argue that there has been gratuitous violence shown in lessons on slavery. So how do we decide whether it's gratuitous or whether it's actually an important part? We do think it's an important part of the curriculum on transatlantic slavery, but what's core? What's important? One of the things that young people, we know, and I'm sure you've had this experience, we know that in the classroom, one of the things that young people say, why didn't they fight back?
Yeah.
Why did they let it happen? I wouldn't have let it happen. If they were trying to do, man, I'd have fought back. Violence and terror were absolutely essential in the non-consensual relationships of New World slavery. They lubricated the engine of enslavement and slave labour, securing and supporting the dominance of white Europeans over the enslaved Africans. Yes, this is an economic system. It's part of a major economic system. But it's non-consensual, and without violence and terror, it wasn't happening. It was not going to work. And actually they knew that before the people know that. People don't think they're going to the coast of West Africa to pick up a load of people who would be much happier if they could be taken and enslaved and taken across the Americas. They know that because the slave ship, and Rediker's book, if you haven't read Rediker's Slave Ship, please read it. It's so wonderful. And it shows how, you know, the slave ship is weaponized as before it leaves the ports of Britain, the slave ships are weaponized because they know this is a war. This is a war, and it's, yes, it's economic and the rest, but the violence and terror are essential parts of it. But violence and terror are also vital for abolition as well. And here it becomes more difficult. It's very nice here because you can unequivocally say violence and terror are evil. They're an evil part of that system. But what about abolition? See, I think when you come to abolition, violence and terror were used to effect agency of the enslaved in their struggles for liberation and their persistent resistance to domination. We'll talk a little bit more about this in a second, but it's, you know, in abolition, the violence and terror are largely belonging to the enslaved. But in terms of the historical narrative, that's often overshadowed or even condemned by the narrative of non-violent white saviours who tirelessly campaigned for their rescue. So it's sort of the right thing to do, the morality of abolition, was for the enslaved people to wait for the white European saviours to decide and to campaign and so forth. And that's what That's what happened. And so we've got to challenge that. So violence and terror come into the abolition story.
And finally, on legacies, violence and terror are essential to the operation of contemporary systemic racism that fights new wars of subjugation. And so the long-term legacy of that initial violence and that initial implementation of a racial slavery-based system has had long-term consequences in many of the Western societies where slavery and colonialism played a major role.
And so in terms of wars of subjugation, we'd be thinking about like current wars of subjugation. What would we?
So within cities, so the war on drugs, for example, wars of oppression, third world sort of suppression of third world nationalist movements using modern liberal ideas as a motivation for.
Yeah, and so. So all the way through, in all the three pillars of this work, violence and terror are there. How are we going to teach that? If we think about the challenges that that faces, that we face in doing that, if we're going to put violence and terror into the curriculum, what are the challenges we face? If we think about the school as a system now, so forget, we're not talking about the academy, we're not talking about what the history is, we're now thinking about school, because we're now thinking pedagogy, as well as curriculum, but we're now thinking pedagogically. And if we think about schools as institutions, the notion of violence plays a part. There are narratives and indeed theses about violence that are there within the school. You're now going to say, I'm going to teach about violence and terror. And so, what are the challenges for us as teachers in the inclusion of violence in the topic of Britain and transatlantic slavery? So I'm going to give you probably about 7 minutes to just consider that on your table. What do you see as the challenges? If we're going to include this feature, what are the challenges?